Hello and welcome to an emergency trade edition of the Buds All Day podcast. I'm Sats Mundine here with Lepa's Legacy.
Yeah, how's it going?
And we are going to recap the Leafs trade for Nick Foligno. So the Leafs acquired forwards Nick Foligno and Stefan Nosin today from the Columbus Blue Jackets and the San Jose Sharks. So basically the Leafs gave Columbus their first round pick this year, as well as a fourth round pick. And then they made another trade through San Jose to get San Jose to eat a bit more of that Foligno salary. So San Jose was given another fourth round pick from the Leafs. So all in all, what the Leafs basically gave up was a first rounder and two fourth rounders to acquire Nick Foligno at 25% of his salary. Now Foligno with 25% of his salary carries a cap hit of $1.375 million for the rest of the year, which based on Puckpedia's knowledge and information says that the Leafs have about $2.792 million of cap space left to work with Fred still on the LTIR list. Now, Lebda, what did you think of this trade?
Yeah, if anyone's been on my Twitter account recently, I don't think it's very secret what I think of this. I had so much faith in Kyle Dubas as not being one of these idiot GMs that's going to go out and overpay for something stupid. And then it's exactly what he does today. That price for Foligno is disgusting. Giving up a first-round pick for Nick Foligno this year is embarrassing. I know it's a weak draft. I don't care about the first-round pick. If we went out and got like an actual good forward, I wouldn't care. Throw it to the moon. Throw the first in the fire. I do not care about the first-round pick. Spending that first-round pick on Nick Foligno is such a joke at this point. Like, when that trade happened, I almost threw my phone through my TV. I was so upset.
I feel your pain. I was actually sleeping and I woke up to the news and I was very disappointed as well. Now, my opinion is a little more positive than that. I do see some of the value Foligno brings as a defensive forward, as a guy who brings those intangibles, even though people talk about his playoff, you know, he brings that playoff mentality. He's won exactly one playoff series in his entire career. So
one playoff series, and he's put up 0.4 points a game in the playoffs. I don't know how that equals playoff success, but, you know, people can go on with the intangibles.
Yeah, so people are gonna love that. We've got six captains on the team now. But I will say how I feel about this move is that if Taylor Hall were already off the market and it were 3 p.m. on deadline day and the Leafs hadn't done anything and they just had their first round pick burning a hole in their pocket, I would have accepted this move. Like, I would rather have this move than nothing at all. I do think he brings something to the team, and I think this is a year where we definitely have to go in. It's just that given the relative cost, you see what the Islanders were able to get for their first round pick. They got Zajac and Palmieri at 50% retained. Like, those are that's a package I would, yeah, like definitely Palmieri. Palmieri's still a scorer at this point of his career. He hasn't having the greatest year, but neither is Nick Foligno, which we'll get into later. And then they were able to get Zajac, who's a solid third line center. Meanwhile, we gave a first rounder and two fourth round picks to get a guy who I certainly hope they don't put on the second line, because I would take Galchenyuk over him there every day of the week. I think Foligno likely and hopefully slots in that third line role on a line with Mikheyev, Engvall, and himself, a line in which you hope you can play against some tougher competition and they can play to even, because that line has no scoring. Nick Foligno, breaking news, not a scorer at this point in his career.
Yeah, I don't understand this move. This move just makes no sense. Nick Foligno has been horrible this year. And especially if you look at what the Leafs did 2 days ago, they got Riley Nash, who I'm going to go out and say is having a better year than Nick Foligno for free. And I know he's injured. That may be, you know, whatever. You just got he's had better impacts defensively this year. He's had two less points this year. I know historically Nick Foligno is a lot better of a hockey player, but he's an older player on a severe decline. Riley Nash is better. You got him for free. I don't understand why you'd spend a first-round pick on Nick Foligno this year. The two fourths, that's just to get the salary down. That's whatever. It doesn't matter. Yeah, I'm really, really struggling to find an upside to this. And as you said, like, if Nick Foligno goes into the top six, I'm going to go to Sheldon Keefe's house and burn it down, because that's embarrassing. But also on that third line, defensively, that line should be fairly solid. They are going to get nothing done offensively because the way Mikheyev and Engvall get their offense done is in transition, and Nick Foligno is not a good player in transition. So
no, he's not a transition player. He's been a big time forechecker this year. He's the highest forecheck guy on Columbus. He's the kind of guy where if we like the Leafs have been very good this year at holding leads. They've put a real emphasis on. I know they've given up some quick goals lately in games, but as a whole, if they get a lead in a game, they've done a very good job of closing the deal. And Foligno definitely does help that. He's one of those guys who if we're down late or if we're up late, he's a guy you can trust to put out there, and you're probably not going to give up a goal. Now that said, our third line is going to contribute no offense. He's got 7 goals and 9 assists for 16 points in 42 games this year. So not exactly an offensive juggernaut. He's shooting 9.6%, so a pretty standard percent. So 7 goals over 42 games, that puts him at about a 13 goal pace, which is a very average third line goal scorer. We're going to be relying on that fourth line to give us some offense, I think, in the case that Foligno is on that third line. So that third line is going to get some very, very defensive minutes. I just, like you said, I don't see how we could give up a first round for this when you see the price that Palmieri and Zajac went for. And then you see what everybody talks about, Barclay Goodrow and Blake Coleman for Tampa, how they got them for first round picks. Guess what? Both of those guys, infinitely better than Nick Foligno, as well as being locked up for multiple seasons. Infinitely better.
Like I cannot stress the word infinitely better enough on Goodrow and Coleman. And yeah, exactly like you said, they're younger. And Barclay Goodrow is the one I'm kind of seeing the most comparable to Foligno. Tampa got a third round pick back in that deal. Like the costs are not even close to the same.
No, and you can say this, it could be a bit different based on the fact that this is a weaker draft. It's a draft where people don't have as much scouting into it. So the picks aren't as valuable as they otherwise would be, but when we've been hearing that teams aren't willing to pay a first rounder for Taylor Hall. Taylor Hall is so much better than Nick Foligno in every way. Everybody says what a terrible, terrible year Taylor Hall is having, and they're the people that are thrilled with Foligno say they'd way rather have him. Taylor Hall impacts play driving so much more effectively than Nick Foligno. His possession numbers are exceptional. That he's very, very positive possession numbers, and everybody's talking about how bad his offense is. He's still outscoring Nick Foligno from a points perspective this year, and that's with a shooting percentage of 2%. So Taylor Hall would have given us that elite option to put on our second line, whereas Foligno, if you're putting him on the second line, that's not good. He's not going to create more scoring. I would undoubtedly take Galchenyuk on the second line over him because Galchenyuk's got the skill to hang with those guys. And part of this deal makes me think that they've been so impressed by Galchenyuk that I do believe that probably has impacted their search for a scoring top six forward. I think they trust him to stick in that role.
See, like you say that, and I do agree with that statement in principle. But then why did you go out and spend a first-round pick on a third-line player? If you're like, oh, Alex Galchenyuk, we basically got him for free, whatever. He's an impact player. We don't need another top-six forward. Then you just hold on to that asset. Don't overpay someone just because of one little thing. Now, we both said at the beginning of the podcast, first-round pick, we don't care. It's a weaker draft. It's not a big deal. But you could still use that deal. If you don't use it at the deadline, maybe you use it at the draft and go get – maybe Nashville, you know, sputters way out, misses the playoffs, and they're like, okay, now we're definitely going to rebuild. Now you have an extra first-round pick to go get an Ekholm or something like that in the summer. It's just I hate the fact that we overpaid for a player that is going to honestly, for those listening on the podcast, like I'm holding up like a centimeter between my fingers. Like that's how much he's going to make the Leafs better. He's going to make the Leafs better by such a minimal amount where, you know, even if we forget Taylor Hall, any top six forward, if we forget that, like the impact that those guys would have would be so much greater. But even if we don't add that, Nick Foligno as a panic move doesn't add that much to our team to where it's worth panicking and spending a first round pick.
So it's easy to see where Kyle Dubas would argue with you on that. He would say that he believes the toughness, because there's no denying Foligno does bring an element of toughness. He does. he does provide hits, which we've said how much we love those. So that's what he provides. He provides that leadership. He is a captain. They saw him in the playoffs last year and they were clearly impressed by what he did. So that's where they would argue. And I'm not saying I totally agree with that. I think I agree with you that I would definitely have looked for a more offensively minded option to play on that second line with Nylander and Tavares. Now, one thing I will disagree with is that what you said about the first round pick. I think that if this was the only move available, like I said, and it was deadline day and we had no time, I would take this over nothing because it does, in my opinion, help us to win. So and this is an all in season. We need to cash in that pick now. We needed to do this year because we're never going to have a chance like this to get to the third round with the way the North Division is set up. So I am all aboard trading that pick. I'm just not as happy with what the Leafs decided to use it on. Now, I think we should get into kind of the cap ramifications a little bit more to kind of see what the Leafs could still do. So with this deal, like we said, the Leafs have right now $2.79 million in cap space, which would allow them still to trade for a salary of up to almost $6 million if the other team were willing to retain. Now, let's just go with Taylor Hall as an example here.
Before you go on to that thought, so the Leafs, I just don't want anyone to come at us. So the current cap space is with Frederik Andersen still on LTIR. So technically the Leafs are $1.2 million in the hole right now, according to cap space. That money from Fred Andersen and Riley Nash, to an extent being on LTIR, is why the Leafs have that $2.7 million in cap space.
Yeah, so basically, in order for Fred to come back and play regular season minutes, the Leafs would have to clear out some salary, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so let's just play off of the idea that Fred is on LTIR for the rest of the year, as is Riley Nash. So if the Leafs were to add an Alexander Kerfoot to a deal, they would be looking at being able to bring in $6.29 million of salary. So I think there's a couple ways they could go. As sad as it makes me to say, I think Hall is probably out of the picture. It looks like they've made their move on forward and this is what they're doing. Now, what I could see them doing is using either that $2.79 million to get a goalie or maybe throwing in Kerfoot to get a bigger amount in net. But whichever goalie they get, I think would probably fit under that $2.79 million. Like we've said, we really like Linus Allmark. He's making $2.6 million. Jonathan Bernier, I don't think Detroit would have to retain much. So I think this move kind of does signal. I think there is something else coming for the Leafs. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they traded a second-round pick, if they traded a prospect to get a goalie. What do you think of that, Lebda?
So on that topic, there's a couple things I want to address. So the Leafs have three draft picks in this upcoming draft now, a second, a fifth, and a sixth, I believe. Potentially that six is the conditional one, if I'm not mistaken. So there's that point. So if we're looking at trading a lower draft pick, obviously there's still years in the future. That might be enticing for a team. Linus Allmark makes a lot of sense. Detroit has retained two salaries now. So in order for that, they can only retain one more salary. So they'd have to kind of make up their minds if Jonathan Bernier is the one they're willing to retain. I have a feeling they are going to move him. So that probably is why they're saving that one. So that does make sense. Yeah, the only thing that I'm holding hope on is the fact that Alex Kerfoot hasn't been traded. That's the only thing where I'm like, okay, maybe he has something else in the wings. Maybe there's something else coming. And if Kyle Dubas turns around and gets a legitimate top six forward or gets a legitimate impact player.
We forgive you, Kyle.
With what he's done, boom. We can basically just delete this podcast, delete everything I've said. I'll take it back. But as things stand right now, I'm so, so disappointed in Kyle Dubas.
So this move is a signal that Fred's done for the year and they are able to get a quality goalie to tandem with Jack Campbell. I would be happy with that as a deadline because this Leafs team is good enough. I know Foligno's not the upgrade we wanted, but even before Foligno, this team could easily win the cup if they get solid goaltending. So if we're able to acquire a goalie and we add Nick Foligno to that third line, I gotta say, it does give us a pretty good third line. I think we would be... we would be very well positioned for the playoffs. Now, my pie in the sky scenario, it's not going to happen. That's what we think is going to happen. My prediction is that we do end up getting another goalie in here, whether that's a crappier goalie like Forsberg or somebody of a higher quality. But like I said, if we were to add Kerfoot to a deal, that's $6.29 million. Taylor Hall and Linus Ullmark do cost $10.6 million, so Buffalo wouldn't even have to eat the full half to get those guys. So I'm going to bed tonight with dreams of Taylor Hall in my head, as unrealistic as they seem. But if we were able to Buffalo doesn't have a scouting staff, so they probably don't even want draft picks. So if we could just toss them a couple prospects and that was the deal tomorrow, I would erect a statue of Kyle Dubas on my lawn. I would apologize for any negative thing I've ever said on this podcast about him, which is not very many before today at all. But let's just be honest, Lepta, that's probably not happening.
I would put the chances of that happening at about 4%. I just don't see it happening. I think we're out on Taylor Hall. My biggest fear now is Montreal put Gallagher on LTIR. They're like, oh, Taylor Hall, no one's bid on him. Let's up the bid. And then all of a sudden he goes to Montreal. That team becomes insanely good. Well, not insanely good, a whole lot better. And then we get booted in the first round because we decided to spend a first-round pick on stupid Nick Foligno and not improve our team by that much. Like, that's what's going through my head right now. That's why I'm so upset, because we didn't improve our team that much. Well, I'll give him time. Like we said, he goes out, steals another player, a really impactful player and a goalie. Maybe I'll shut up a little bit. But, like, that's what's going through my head right now, is a team that we're going to have to face picking up a guy like Taylor Hall or another impact player because we wasted our assets on Nick Foligno.
Yeah, so I'll get into the concrete stat impact of Nick Foligno here for a second. So this year he's been, by our APM, which these are charts that measure your impact on goals for, expected goals for, your shooting possession, or your possession, sorry, which is Corsi for. So looking at Foligno's year this year, Nick Foligno has negative impacts on team goals for, a very slight negative impact on expected goals for. So clearly he's not driving offense this year. Again, Corsi for, which is your percentage of shots while you're on the ice, he is quite negative in that as well. Now he is slightly by the smallest margin positive by expected goals against. So he's been slightly good defensively this year, and then his Corsi against, which again, shots against while he's on the ice, is slightly positive again. So this year has not been a good year for Nick Foligno. Now, in the past, if we were getting 2019-2020 version of Nick Foligno, I would be a lot happier about this trade because he had excellent impacts on expected goals against and Corsi against last year while having only very slightly negative impacts on offense. So the last year's version of Nick Foligno would be an amazing addition to the Leafs' third line. If he does do that, that definitely does add a lot of value to the Leafs' third line. But he is 33, so it may be a bit unreasonable to expect him to return to that form that he had last year. But you never know. Playing for a new team with a clear chance at a cup, he's going to be as determined as anything. He is going to bring some grit. He's going to bring some toughness and hits, which I know a lot of people love, but basically, we're going to need a turnaround from him this year to be remotely worth a first-round pick.
Yeah, I'm fine with all this toughness and grit and intangibles and stuff, but if that's what you're looking for at the deadline, why'd you sign Joe Thornton? Why'd you sign Wayne Simmons? Why'd you sign Zach Bogosian? Like, people are like, oh, we already have enough scoring. You can never have enough scoring because scoring is the only thing that wins you hockey games. You will never win a hockey game if you do not score. That is a fact. Yes, you need to play defense, blah, 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 blah. But the simple fact, if you do not have enough scoring, you will not win a hockey game.
I saw a tweet today, and this is kind of there's the two sides of this argument where people want the toughness, people want the scoring. So a Twitter user called Age Mac, who I follow, very good follow, he said, if you don't understand the need for a solid guy like Foligno and the lack of need for Hall, you must be new to Leafs Nation and the playoff failure after playoff failure. The Leafs don't need more players that can put the puck in the net. They need a guy full of heart and determination. And I just want to say I wholeheartedly disagree with that. Lebda, what would you say was the problem against Columbus last year?
Oh, yeah.
Was it heart? Was it heart in the playoffs? Was that why we lost?
It definitely wasn't heart and grit. It was we couldn't score a freaking goal, man. Like, we, like, you could say we got goalied, but we didn't score. So last year, I'd say last year was the first round, we didn't even technically make the playoffs, but the first round where the Leafs were so, like, above and beyond favorites that that was a catastrophic loss. Every year kind of before that, we just played a really good team. The last time we played Boston was probably the one where, like, we were actually the better team, but we couldn't get it done. But that Columbus series, and our biggest problem was scoring. And it, even if you, like, let's take it to this year. What is Nick Foligno good at? Like, defense? Our defense hasn't been that bad this year. Our offense has been very good, too. So I know that's kind of a mute point. Our penalty kill has been exceptional in the last little while. Ever since Jack Campbell started playing goalie, our penalty kill has been great. So that takes another kind of skill that we didn't really need an upgrade on that Nick Foligno comes in for. If you want to bring up intangibles, I brought in all those players there. Like, it just seems like we traded for this idea of a player that we didn't really necessarily need.
Yeah, if you look at the Columbus series, the games we lost, 2-0, 4-3, 3-0. What's the common theme? That's three goals in the games we lost. And in the games we won, we still scored. We scored four goals and three goals. So in over the course of a five-game series, the Leafs scored, quick maths, 10 goals. So two goals a game. I don't think Foligno is really going to punch the puck in the net. So I don't see how he's relevant to what was our playoff problems. Now, you could say, well, the Leafs didn't score because they weren't determined. I'm going to call BS on that. I just think
that's a whole load of horse crap.
So, man. I've seen people saying that you don't need Taylor Hall because the Leafs already have scoring. I do have a thought on this. It's that, guess what? More goals is not a bad thing. Just because you have a goal scorer doesn't mean you don't need a second one. So let's just convert this to baseball. Let's say the Blue Jays, looking at their roster, they have George Springer, they have Vlad Guerrero, they have Bo Bichette. All of a sudden, let's just say Mookie Betts becomes available. Are the Blue Jays going to say, I don't want Mookie Betts because we already have guys who can hit home runs. We can already score runs. We need pitching. It's like, you do realize you can win 7-6 instead of winning 2-1. Every hockey game doesn't need to be 2-1. If we add another guy who can score, that is just an extra goal added is worth just as much as an extra goal prevented. So Foligno, does he prevent goals better than Hall? Sure. But does Hall creates goals at a much higher rate than Foligno can prevent them? So it's not, the gains don't stop because you already have scoring talent. More scoring talent is always good. Look at Team Canada. Do you think that Team Canada should just take two lines of stars and be like, oh, we already have enough scoring. Let's get some third line plugs on this team. Like, what kind of logic is that? The point of hockey is to score goals, and adding guys who can do that is what's going to help you win.
Especially on this Leafs team, who is not bad defensively. It's not like we're such a bad team on defense that we're just so desperate for anyone who can defend that we're willing to give up a price like this. Like, our team, I'd almost argue our team is good defensively. Like, sure, maybe we make some mistakes, but who doesn't make mistakes? Like, the amount of games where we dominate the possession and limit, like, the high danger chances, limit the scoring chances against. Like, we talk about it all the time in our, like, reaction podcast. The Leafs are not bad defensively to make this move, like, justifiable in my mind.
No, and now, after all this Foligno talk, I guess we should consider they did also acquire Stefan Nosen, who seems like a bit of a throw-in in my mind. He's only played a few games this year. Over the last 3 years, he's had 960 minutes of even strength ice time. He is a very, very black hole on offense with slightly positive defensive impact. So he might be a guy, if we're about seven injuries deep, who you'll see in a playoff series, and he'd be an okay fourth liner who's kind of going to, you hope, just provide nothing at all, like no goals for, no goals against, just a, like we said about Riley Nash, kind of a fast forward button. He's nowhere near the caliber of defensive player that Riley Nash is. But that said, that kind of wraps up the deal. So we got Foligno. He fills our third line. What do you predict that our lines are in the playoffs if this is our roster, Lebda?
So Hyman, Matthews, Marner, Galchenyuk, Tavares, Nylander, Mikheyev, Engvall, Foligno. And then that fourth line's where it kind of gets, like, tricky because you have Simmons, Spezza, and Thornton, who are all veterans, where on paper you're like, all those guys are going to play. But we also still have like Alex Kerfoot in the mix. We have Nosen who's come into the mix now.
I don't think he's going to play a role, to be honest.
But like with all those veterans, Nosen's just going to go to the AHL. There's just no room for him. Riley Nash, we still have on that, like for that fourth line. So that fourth line is like a logjam right now. Ideally right now, based on how everyone's playing, you're probably going Riley Nash, Kerfoot, Spezza.
Yeah, realistically. Now that's the thing too, though, is as I want that line to be a scoring line on the fourth line, if our third line is going to be just a black hole on offense. So I don't know, maybe there's a scenario where they, where Riley Nash is healthy and they put Riley Nash with Foligno and they, and Engvall, and they just say, you guys are going out. You are our fast forward button. I actually think that could be a good playoff shutdown line if you can get your other bottom six line scoring. But I just don't know how realistic. I just don't know how realistic it is, given the fact that you know Simmons, Spezza, and Thornton aren't coming out of the lineup. So in that scenario, that would be sitting either Mikheyev or Engvall, whoever's not on that line, and then going with a fourth line of Simmons, Spezza, and Thornton. And I think that line is just too slow to really accomplish anything offensively.
Yeah, maybe if you give those guys like 4 minutes each and they never all three play together, then that's okay. But the Leafs have a real log jam at the bottom of their lineup right now, which is, again, why I said it earlier, that's the only reason I'm still holding out hope for something else, because there is that log jam. Like, what, you're not going to play Alex Kerfoot 5 minutes a night making $3.5 million on this team. That makes no sense.
Well, with that said, too, like, you could, with the acquisition of Riley Nash, if he, as long as he's ready for the playoffs, you almost wonder if that makes Engvall expendable in a way, because you throw in Engvall's salary of 1.25, you throw in Kerfoot 3.5, that's $4.75 million right there. That's two guys who probably be top six players in Buffalo. So I wouldn't mind seeing a kind of quantity for quality move. If you throw those two guys in a package and then you add a couple prospects and you get Taylor Hall, all of a sudden, let's just say in that scenario, you're looking at those lines. You've got the Hyman, Matthews, Marner first line. You've got the Hall, Tavares, Nylander second line. You've got your shutdown line of Mikheyev, Nash, Foligno. And then for your fourth line, you could go Galchenyuk, Spezza, Thornton, or Simmons. That is a lineup that would get me to going.
See,
but again, pie in the sky.
Such a, like, a good lineup. And Taylor Hall is just such a difference maker in that aspect. But yeah, I'm a little bit confused at what Kyle Dubas is doing, adding like Riley Nash, if he was already going to get Nick Foligno, and then getting Nosen as a throw-in. That may have just been something to make the trade go over or make it legal or whatever. I'm not exactly sure how that works with the NHL, but it seems like he's stockpiling these bottom six kind of forwards, and which is implying that something else is going to happen. But then also there's
fingers crossed, man.
Kind of other stuff going on with, you know, their Leafs haven't said that Anderson's done for the year. There's rumors that they hope he's coming back and all that, which makes me think, oh, maybe they're not going to try and add a big salary. So it's just really, really confusing. I just know that today was such a disappointing day to see that deal that I don't know what to think going forward.
So I'll just say, for my final thoughts, I would be on the lookout for Kerfoot or Engvall being dealt tomorrow. Just that Riley Nash addition, the more I think about it, the more, like you said, there's just such a logjam down there where I don't see what's the point of trading for Riley Nash if he's like seven guys down on the depth chart. It only seems like they're preparing to do a quantity for quality type of deal. I would have Kerfoot and Engvall as the two guys that I could definitely see being traded tomorrow. So let's just hope that Kyle Dubas does add something tomorrow.
Yeah, if you bring in a top six forward, I would say like a top four defense, but they're not going to bring that in. They don't need one. So really the only like big impact player they're going to bring in is a top six forward. If you do that and then you spent your first round on Foligno and your seventh round on Riley Nash to replace Kerfoot and Engvall, that makes this a great deadline. But as things sit right now, I'm at a loss for words. I'm really, really disappointed in Kyle Dubas at this point. So here's hoping he does have something up his sleeve. We know he does work like a thief in the night at times, and things unexpected happen, which is why I am still holding out hope. But today has been a real disappointing day for old Lebda's legacy over here.
Yeah, I do have so much faith in Dubas. Like, every movie he's made up to this point I've agreed with. I know the Tyson Berry deal didn't work out, but I admittedly at the time I completely agreed with it. I loved what he did this offseason. So if anybody's earned the benefit of the doubt in my eyes, it's Kyle Dubas. So Kyle, please, if you're listening, which you're not, do one more move, get a goalie and another forward, please. Bye.